But one thing that stuck out at me, because it really hit close to home, and that is an article by Curtis Herbert, who's developer of the Slopes app.
Is it Herbert?
I don't know. Herbert?
Well, it's difficult because, like, you know, Stephen Colbert.
I don't know. When I saw his name, I thought of, like, the ice cream. Sherbet. I don't know.
Well, surely you're Americans. You don't pronounce a H in herb, do you? It's herb.
Yeah.
Now he sounds French. He's good as Herbert. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 17 of the Swift Over Coffee podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Sean Allen.
It feels to me like it's been forever since the last episode.
I forgot we even had a podcast, Paul, to be honest with you. It's been that long. To fill everybody in, we did a live episode while we were together in London at the end of March. And we did that like 3 days after we released the previous episode. And we do this once every 2 weeks. So it's been over 3 weeks since we've recorded.
Yeah, it was hard last time because we hadn't had a lot of news happening since the previous episode. And now it's been like 3 weeks. There's so much news happened since.
We should
perhaps do weekly podcasts now, Sean.
Yeah, but we're back to normal now.
And of course, we've been through some important times. I believe you are approaching the end of your job search?
Hopefully, question mark. Well,
the beginning of the end.
Right. Yeah. So I have, today is April 14th. We're recording this. I have all my, final on-site interviews lined up for over the next 2 weeks. So I'll be doing about 4 different interviews. So, anybody that's done some of those final on-site interviews, you know, the 6 hour ones where you even have a lunch break in between, you know, those can be grueling. So that's what my next 2 weeks look like. All right, Paul, as always, it's time for some news, and it feels like this happened a long time ago, but again, we haven't had a chance to talk about it, and that is Swift 5 has officially been released. And it's a little weird. I think this is the first major Swift release, like a Swift 3, Swift 4, that was kind of done unceremoniously. You know, it wasn't attached to a major iOS 13, iOS 12, I'm getting ahead of myself, an iOS 11 or an iOS 12, but I think that's a welcome change.
Once again, it is worth saying that I am really glad Apple were able to push back Swift 5 so it's not attached to a major OS bump. It was always a bit of a strange thing, you know, we've got to have new iPhones, therefore we've got to have new OS, got to have new Xcode, got to have new Swift all at once. It made no sense. This was obviously hard work. It was pushed back from Swift 3 to Swift 4, Swift 5. They took their time getting it right, and I'm just so grateful for that. Have you actually started porting code over Swift 5 now, Sean?
Yeah, I did that a couple days after release. And it's kind of funny how I mentioned it was done like unceremoniously. Like, of course, I saw it on Twitter. But at work, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Swift 5 is out. You know, I just had completely forgot about it. So that's why I was a couple days late. But it was super easy, smooth sailing. I had some minor issues with some third party libraries that aren't updated, but that was pretty easy to fix. And, you know, it doesn't really have to do with my Swift source code. So everything was all good. The only thing is, like, nothing in Swift 5 I'm like immediately jumping to start using, you know, because in Swift 4.2, I was all over #warning, #error. I used that profusely, definitely switched over to, you know, .toggle and .random. Nothing in Swift 5 is like I'm using like immediately that I couldn't wait for. How about you?
So I moved over all my code even before release. You know, I haven't got the patience for old code. But as you said, it wasn't hard, right? You know, I guess it wasn't attached to a WWDC. So there wasn't any overlay changes. So no APIs were being updated to have the new result type, for example. And even like last year's 4.2 release, they added little dots everywhere. You know, UI application dot launch options, NS with a string dot key kind of thing. I'm enjoying little things though. You know, the fact that the new conditional try flattens nested optionals is small, but really nice.
Moving on, we have a bunch of proposals that were in review. And, you know, a lot of them we've talked about on previous episodes. So, you know, if you're new to Swift Over Coffee, go back and check those out. But they are finally now accepted into the Swift language. And there's a lot of them, so we're just going to kind of list them off real quick. SE0246, generic math functions, that got accepted with a small modification. You no longer have to write import math at the top of your file. You just get it by default. SE0249, key path expressions as functions, and SE0252, key path member lookup. Both of those were accepted. And one more we'll talk a little bit about was SE0248, string gaps and missing APIs. And what this is, it's basically 9 new methods and properties that fill in some commonly encountered gaps and missing functionality for strings and its various types. It's purely additive And, you know, developers were, you know, creating their own versions of these methods and stuff for these trivial definitions, but they'll no longer have to do that. It includes things like APIs on Unicode's various encodings, two generic initializers for string indices and range of indices. You know, I personally haven't had to use these, you know, additions, but I like that Swift is adding methods and properties to fill these gaps.
When I saw that proposal, SE0248, it was just after I'd read Ian Partridge's blog post about the advent of code, where he talked about going through this challenge series, basically, of problems being solved, and he used Swift for them. And it was fascinating because these things were trivial to solve in Python, Ruby, JS, PHP, whatever, but very, very hard to solve in Swift because of gaps in APIs, mostly around strings. And I thought, oh, fantastic. They were lightning fast. They're going to fill in these gaps, add these things in. And it's not. It's fairly niche level things I've never had to worry about. I now have never got to worry about them slightly better, I guess.
You're right.
But it hasn't fixed the fundamental issues that Ian runs into. And that's frustrating. And I hope they'll circle back to this again with the sequel. You know, episode two. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Maybe even episode 9, a little Star Wars reference in there. Anyway, and now here are ones that are still in review. And first we got SE0257, eliding commas from multi-line expression lists. And this is very, very small thing. But you know how if you have a function name with a lot of parameters and each parameter has a comma on it, but if you hit return to take it to a new line, this is proposing that if it's on a new line, you don't have to have the comma. How do you feel about this, Paul?
we're gonna have to see. This is a tiny, tiny, tiny change. Like, it couldn't get much smaller than this. Remove comma, use a line break to avoid visual clutter. That's it. That's the entire change. But it's so challenging because we've always had commas here for these kinds of things. You know, when you print A, B, and C, it's always A, B, C. When you make an array of five things, it's A, B, C, D. We're just used to that, and it's like an argument from tradition, the worst kind of logical fallacy. I know it's wrong. We've had them my entire programming career. I'm so used to them
right. That
seeing with the code without it, I see immediately compiler errors in my head. That's not going to work.
No, I like it for one. I like the clean look of it. You put it on a new line, get rid of those useless commas, just like getting rid of those semicolons, right? It's kind of the same thing a little bit. But I think where we differ here in this, I think it's kind of interesting because maybe various people in the audience will side with you versus siding with me is, like you said, you've been programming for 20 plus years, and this is how you've always done it. Whereas I'm, like I call a Swift baby, I've grown up with Swift. So I'm used to things rapidly changing all the time. So I shouldn't say not afraid of change, but I'm not against change. So I like this.
It's one of those places where I'm used to the idea of white space in Swift as being inconsequential, nearly always. There are a few places where it's required, like around operators, you're gonna have white space there, for example, but otherwise I don't really care. And so if I write some code with A, B, C, D, and I insert line breaks in there, I'd expect nothing to change. And it wouldn't change in this change either. But it doesn't work the other way around. If I remove the line breaks and go to a single line, I have to reinsert commas because they're required now when they weren't required before. So it makes white space slightly more meaningful in a way I'm not used to in Apple's platforms. But honestly, I expect it's like, do you remember when you had the iPhone 4, 4S? Mm-hmm. And the 5 came out and it was like, this feels weirdly big.
It felt huge. And now it feels like a child's toy in my hand.
I know. You know? The 6 came out and it's like a dinky phone now and it was huge at the time. And I've got the Max now, so I can't go back anymore. And that's just the way things go. And in 6 months' time, when this is finally approved, I think it will go through personally. Although it is being quite heavily argued in the forums, quite frankly. If it happens, when we change, it'll look weird going back.
Yeah. And similarly, SE0255, implicit returns from single expression functions, is continuing the trend of removing some syntax here. So what this is, anytime you have a function and there's only one line where you're just like, so if you have a function that takes in two ints, you know, A and B, and then it returns A plus B and it returns an int, and it's only one line, this is proposing that you no longer have to have the return keyword in front of that. So more getting rid of it. And we're talking about getting rid of syntax. And I don't know how I feel about this change, but I'm kind of wondering, like, where do we draw the line, you know, here? Like, how much are we going to remove before it gets ridiculous?
In this case, what we're seeing is harmonization. Because effectively what's happening here is there's only one line in the function. The function must return something. Therefore, that one line must be the one to return something. It's simple, you know, deduction, right? And that same thing is applied to closures. Closures do have implicit return keywords. We can just say, you know, $0.name, whatever, and it knows it means return $0.name, puts it in there automatically. So we already have half the functionality. So even though it's weird seeing it, you know, for functions, full-on functions, at least it rounds out that error a little bit and makes it consistently odd, which I think is better than being inconsistently odd, you know?
Fair point, fair point. Wrapping up the news section, we have SE0250, the Swift Code Style Guidelines and Formatter.
Everyone's favorite.
You're right. And it's now discussion closed. We're no longer talking about it ever again, right? Wrong. But anyway, it had 221 replies in the Swift forum, which was crazy and a little bit divisive. I'm interested to see how this plays out.
Not many people are saying meh.
Right.
Realistically, a lot of folks love it. A lot of folks hate it. And very few people in the middle. And that's just how it's going to be because this is basically an opinion piece. This does not make the language any better. It doesn't enable things you couldn't do before. It's all subjective discussion about opinion. It's all what do you feel, how do you think, and that's going to make arguments. Yay.
And we're about to find out very, very soon because it's in review and we should have a decision in the next couple days. So maybe I'll get my bag of popcorn ready and get to watch all the drama going. We'll see how this goes.
I'm rooting for it. I can't wait.
Next up, we have our picks for the episode. What do you got for us, Paul?
So this time I've been reading an article by TechCrunch, which I think is interesting in a number of places. It goes over a range of topics with varying degrees of accuracy, but ultimately it's TechCrunch. So it's going to get a lot of readers regards of its accuracy, and people believe what they want to believe. It's called Wither Native App Developers, and it makes a number of points, some of which are just bluntly anecdotal at best. For example, the author kicks off by saying, it's much easier to hire app developers now than it was 2 years ago. Which, I don't know, maybe that's true. Maybe it's a result of more Swift learners now getting onto professional jobs.
I don't know. I think this is a case of like the unstoppable force, meaning the immovable object kind of thing. Because if you talk to companies here, especially in San Francisco, Silicon Valley, like I've been talking to a few lately in my interviews, they say it's so hard to hire, you know, app developers. And then you talk to, you know, some junior developers coming up, these Swift learners say it's so hard to find a job. So like, you know, one of these things has to be wrong, right?
Yeah, it's back to that horrible junior hiring fallacy. No one wants to hire juniors. And it's just not possible, right?
Well, junior's got to be some senior somehow, right?
Yeah. The author says that app downloads had a paltry, air quotes, 5% increase between 2016 and 2018, but revenue went up by 70%, which is all that matters to me, quite frankly. I mean, downloads are interesting, you know, volume of stuff's interesting, but making money off this is what we're trying to do in the first place, realistically. And that's a massive number, 70%. We think that the App Store has been out for, what, 7 years by that point?
Yeah.
You know, it's still going up 70% across those 2 years.
Yeah, and I agree with you on this one. And this is the problem with using percentages, obviously, right? 5% app growth in 2016, you know, in 2016, 2018, like the App Store's already saturated and matures, right? They stopped even saying the number at WWDC. You know, they used to say, how many millions in the App Store or whatever? They stopped even saying that because it was ridiculous.
The big sign check, right? Remember that?
Yeah. How much money they've paid out. Yeah. So the point is, as the number gets crazy large, obviously their percentage increase is going to be smaller and smaller and smaller. But like you said, Paul, 70% revenue increase. That's the bottom line. That's all that matters.
The number of apps in the App Store has been flat for the last 2 years, they say. And the blame they give to this is bizarre. It's more stringent Apple review standards. I thought, if anything, Apple's become more relaxed. We're seeing, in fact, Dave Verwer recently cancelled his App Review Times site because it was now no longer interesting anymore. It was like, oh, a day, half a
right,
day,
yeah.
A few hours, you know. It used to be weeks and weeks sometimes. I always thought it was because more apps were being removed because they weren't updating to have new device support and similar.
Yeah. And also, I mean, your points were very, 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 very valid. Another thing to think about, too, is like I mentioned, I think, you know, the gold rush has been over for a long time. You know, people aren't just pumping out 10 apps and hoping one of them sticks. You know, you have to be more focused on one app. So I think that comes into play as well.
And finally, they round up by saying, I feel at least slightly uneasy about going all in as a specialist app developer if I was early in my career. And that's just like the antithesis of what I believe. I can never agree when someone says that sort of thing. You know, it doesn't, I don't really care, okay, whether you choose Swift or Python or JavaScript or Ruby or PHP. I don't care, even Perl if you have to. It doesn't matter what area you choose, but go all in on something. It's not the language that matters, right? It's your ability to think at a very high level in that language. And if you always are a newbie at Swift and Python and Ruby and da-da-da and never really progress to, you know, more advanced levels of serious language features, you're never going to really get to think at these higher levels, these architectural levels. And you're missing out, I think.
Yeah, and those skills are transferable from language to language.
Exactly.
The other thing here is that, and I say this all the time, that me, because I've said I've specialized in Swift, I've gone all in on Swift, but I don't look at that as all in on app development. I look at that as I'm all in on Apple platforms. Now, is there a guarantee Apple's going to be around in 10, 15 years? No, but that's a pretty good bet that Apple's not really going to go anywhere. So whatever their next platform is, AR, VR, voice, cars, blockchain, whatever they do, you can bet they're going to use Swift to develop on it. So I'm perfectly fine tying my career to Apple.
So all in all, a bit of a strange article, but I say it's going to get a lot of views. So I want to address it here and discuss it because I just don't think it really holds up for much scrutiny.
And that's the sad thing, because I know, like, I've seen articles like this and YouTube videos like this, and it usually always just floods my DMs and emails, people asking me, like, is this real? Should I be doing this? Should I be learning Swift? So,
Flutter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the whole React Native Flutter. There's like a new hot thing, you know, every year. So I don't know. We'll see.
Every 3 months or so right now, I think, Sean.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, what have you been reading over the time since iOSCon?
So I've been reading a lot, actually, lately. But one article that really stuck out to me because it hit close to home, and I'll tell you why in a bit. But that is an article by Curtis Herbert, developer of the Slopes app, titled Pacing Ourselves in the Marzipan Marathon. And like I said, it really hit close to home because the whole point of the article is to kind of like temper some expectations, because I don't know, maybe many of you out there, I have very, very high expectations for WWDC 2019, and I think I was expecting a little too much out of this Marzipan. So basically, this article is all about kind of tempering those expectations, and the first line really sums that up great when he says, expect to see the Swift 1.0 of Marzipan this summer, not the Swift 5 that we all want.
I read only the beginning of the article when it was published, and Curtis said something so bizarre, I just stopped reading. He said that, I'd place decent money on Marzipan being a big part of the Apple Arcade tech stack, which is literally the last place I'd expect Marzipan to be interesting, because they already have these wonderful cross-platform frameworks in SpriteKit and SceneKit.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either, so I kind of left that out of my section of the story. But yeah, I don't know. We'll kind of see how that goes. But the overall sentiment is that I just agree with, because like I said, I know I was probably had way too high of expectations. And what happens when your expectations are too high, they can just never be met. You're ultimately disappointed. And I'm just trying to help people avoid that, because we have to remember this is like a multi-year project that's a long rollout. And a lot of this information was taken from a Bloomberg report that stated, you know, we're likely to get universal platform agnostic binaries by the end of 2021. But this year, 2019, we're probably only going to see iPad apps get that Marzipan love. You know, iPhone apps are slated for like 2020. So again, lower the expectations a little bit as a whole. Don't expect the entire rollout to happen in 2019.
Do we still believe Bloomberg after that comedy chip story they had last year?
Yeah, that was bad.
It was, and there was nothing, no apology or anything out of them that I've seen.
No, I haven't seen the correction. Nothing.
Yeah, it's all silence. Never happened.
No.
Yeah, so obviously the entire rollout, like, oh yes, everything's now Marzipan. That's not going to happen. Apple aren't that kind of company. They do things in a real evolutionary level. They don't want to have like a Windows Vista on their hands. But they do, I think, need to do something big this year. Because last year was really quiet, right? Even though, you know, Siri Shortcuts is very nice, it was still a very quiet year. And they've tried so hard to make developers build apps for all their platforms. I remember the future of TV is apps, right? But only really iOS has been a hit. There aren't many watchOS apps. There aren't many tvOS apps. There aren't many macOS apps, realistically, at least not on the App Store. And I don't think anyone wants to see macOS continue this sort of long, slow decline it's on. So it'd be great to see something major ship. Now, Curtis mentions in the article, it might be hard to port something like HealthKit. I just can't see that. Most of their frameworks are cross-platform because they have no UI attached. HealthKit is just some numbers in a big database. Bluntly, ultimately, it's all it is, which things connect to. Same for HomeKit. Well, Home got ported straight away because it's mostly back-end stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, what were the first ones? HomeKit, the Stocks app, and I think there's one more. Oh, the news. Voice memos or whatever.
Yeah, news was done as well, wasn't it?
News, yeah, yeah. But anyway, another good point he makes that I like is that, you know, even if you're underwhelmed by what Marzipan is in 2019, like, you shouldn't bash Apple for that. And we should kind of applaud them for this new version of Apple, because in the past, Apple would go away in the little corner for years and then only release something once it was final, polished, and done. But over the past few years, we're seeing that, you know, they're not so much doing that anymore. With, you know, Swift 1.0 wasn't quite ready for people to use in production due to the roadmap and the rapid changes that were coming. You know, I don't think most people really took it too seriously until like Swift 2 or 3, but yet Apple released it anyway for us to play around with and give the feedback. And Curtis believes we'll see the same thing with Marzipan, and I tend to agree with him.
I should have to add here, RIP AirPower.
Oh, too soon, man. Too soon.
I think it's worth backing up and putting this into context, because, you know, as you always have a Swift baby, right? But
yep,
it's easy to forget that Swift 1 Beta 1, you know, the very, very first version Apple announced, which is nothing like modern Swift in some respects, already had generics, already had tuples, already had optionals, already had type inference, already had playgrounds and more. It was light years ahead of Objective-C. Header files, gone. All those asterisks, gone. Square brackets galore, gone. And it, yeah, of course it's grown better since then. It's more refined now. It's a much more polished language. It's its own language, really. But it's been incremental improvement on what was already a massive milestone, new, modern language. Now, what I think we're kind of talking about is with Marzipan being potentially something that isn't as good as native AppKit. Like, native AppKit is what builds, you know, desktop software like Pages or Logic and similar real meaty applications. If Marzipan isn't up to that scratch, if it's not as good as the alternative, then it comes down to teams choosing to use Marzipan for convenience. Like, I could use AppKit, I'll get a better app with AppKit, but Marzipan's easier, Marzipan's cheaper. And that is ultimately no better than all those folks arguing for Electron everywhere. And now it's time for our open ballot. Our question this time was, have you experimented with server-side Swift? If so, what are your thoughts? And if not, what's holding you back? We had a number of folks write in to say they're using it on actual projects. Dimitar Chakarov says, I love it. I used Vapor for backend on one of my apps, and it was a good experience. I deployed it on Linode in a Docker container. I know all the buzzwords now. Ion said, I was working for a startup company where we used Vapor 2 for our backend service, and we migrated to Vapor 3 later on. From my experience, Vapor is amazing, and you get to use your existing knowledge into development. Jose Reyes said, yep, I launched my portfolio site with it. I really like it, but to be honest, we're a long way away from the true promise of using server-side Swift, because web UI is still HTML and CSS, and the tooling isn't there in Xcode to support it. It's interesting that these people are saying it is shipping now, because I know that in the Kaltura side, Mercedes-Benz and ING and similar big companies are shipping it. But I haven't seen quite so many from, you know, smaller companies, one-man bands and similar. I haven't seen so many there. So folks are actually launching it, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I love seeing it. I've said it time and time again. I can design an app, I can build a client, I can't build the back end. So I've been waiting for server-side Swift to be, you know, mature and, you know, being shipped by many popular companies to really dive in. So now's the time to dive in. I just gotta find a project and a reason to build it.
Mina says, I'd love to, and once I wanted to start, but I couldn't convince the project managers in the company that it's a good idea to do it. Now I'm not really sure if I learned server-side Swift, is there any project I can use it for or not?
And yeah, that's kind of what I was just saying is, you mentioned the small startups. Like, yeah, there's plenty of companies out there using it, but I haven't seen or heard of a lot of small startups using it either.
What I worry about is that it's the reverse of the JavaScript for apps debate. We're all very conscious of saying, oh, no, we don't want React Native here. It doesn't make sense. You're just trying to use your JS skills everywhere. You should do it in Swift. Learn Swift. It's much better. It's very easy to do the same thing in reverse. Like, just because we can doesn't mean we should, right? We can do everything in Swift. Doesn't mean we ought to do everything in Swift. And it could work out for the best in the long term. But right now, as a massive tide of reasons not to use it. And it's not just, is there a project? It's, do you want to have to write most of your frameworks from scratch? Because they don't exist in Swift yet. They all exist, like 10 of them exist in PHP or Ruby or Python, and zero in Swift. which is why I've shipped several Suicide Swift frameworks to do things that I want to do, things like simple image manipulation, making thumbnails of pictures. Wasn't available anywhere else. I had to do my own library to support that. So if you don't mind that cost, it's more than just the projects. It's the actual cost of building frameworks to support it. There's masters here saying they've been learning, they're not sure where to apply it. Marco Ponce says he loves it, but I was torn at first because of the lack of resources showing example use cases of server-side Swift. However, now there are multiple resources, and I feel the community has embraced it much more. I plan on using Vapor in the future. Tim says, so far my only experience was a Swift on Sundays live stream, which Paul did. We made a Vapor API and a matching iOS app. Richard Garrison was saying, yes, both Vapor and Katura, both frameworks continue to mature and break ground. I am consuming as much information as I can acquire in both platforms and plan to integrate Vapor into an app idea I have catering to several business trades. One of the many wonderful anecdotes in Ken Kosienda's book, Creative Selection, is about keyboards. And they've done a lot of work on two alternative types of keyboards. One's an iPhone, like modern iPhone layout, and one's a Mac style layout. And there's a gorgeous, apparently, animation going between these two keyboard styles. And I showed Jobs, and Jobs' response was, we only need one of these, right? Like, there's no point in having a gorgeous animation, no point in having two very clever ideas. This is a pointless choice. Why do we care? And I worry a little bit when folks saying they're learning both Vapor and Katura, and perhaps even Perfect. I'm not necessarily sure the value's there for doing both. I mean, pick one, do something interesting with it, ship it, and move on. Don't dilly-dally around, compare both, try them out, because you're just kind of procrastinating.
Yeah, are they, I haven't really taken the dive in. Are they that much different, or is it just kind of, you know, small differences?
They are, at this point, quite different. I know IBM's trying to catch up with Vapor. Vapor's a long way ahead and has been for a while, so it's not easy for them right now.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to start these tutorials. I met David Oken of Katura here in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. We met for a beer and got one of the very first copies of a pre-copy of his book, the Ray Wunderlich book of, you know, Katura, server-side Swift with Katura, I believe. So it's sitting back there behind me. I just got to open it up and start reading it.
Some folks just don't have enough time for it. Jason Mitchell says, no, he's still trying to get better at regular Swift. And Caleb Wells says, not yet, still staying busy writing Swift for iOS apps. But I do plan to use it in the future someday. Dream job title, full stack Swift developer.
That would be pretty cool, Caleb. I kind of agree with that. Like I alluded to earlier is that I need the back end to be called, you know, the full stack title. Would be cool to do that all in Swift, if I do say so myself.
I certainly agree that the idea of using everything from watch to server is very, very interesting. And Swift has the possibility of doing it. It's just so young right now that you're fighting against the lack of resources, the lack of frameworks, lack of code, the lack of example resources, the lack of Stack Overflow answers to your questions. It's just a bit Wild West right now.
That's why it's a dream, Paul. We're dreaming about it. It's not there yet.
I want to end on, Sean Olszewski says, in my opinion, the Swift community has a huge amount of work to make server-side Swift a worthy contender to much more mature stacks like .NET, Spring Boot, Node.js, and more. I'm pessimistic we'll break into such a crowded space with much larger efforts behind the competing tech stacks.
While that Sean is pessimistic, this Sean is optimistic. Like I believe we'll get there. We'll get there someday. Like Swift on the server is so young. It's such a baby. Like even, you know, a few years ago, Node.js was nothing, you know? So I don't think you can kind of compare Node.js now to server-side Swift now. So just because it's a crowded space doesn't mean, you know, we shouldn't pursue it. So I'm optimistic. I think we'll get there. And that's going to wrap up this episode of Swift Over Coffee. But as always, we got to leave you with something to think about, and that is next week's open ballot. Do you think Apple Arcade will be good for the wider iOS game development community? But yeah, tell all your friends to subscribe, leave a review. We'll be your best friends if you do. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @SwiftOverCoffee. Talk to you in the next one.
Bye.